Welcome to another episode of That's So Cincinnati. Jason Williams, Sherry Coolidge, Silent Phil, as always on the ones and twos with his laptop with all kinds of beer stickers on it. He remains silent. He just smiles.
And his Brink Brewing hat.
His Brink Brewing hat. As always, he's here. You can't see him, but he's making this happen. We love Phil. Congratulations, Phil, on everything that you do. Our special guest today is Interim Chief of the City of Cincinnati, Police Chief, City of Cincinnati, Teresa Thiechi.
Yes.
And but first, before we bring on Chief Thiechi, is that what do we call her that?
Yeah.
Chief? Okay. Or do we say interim chief?
Stick. No, I never use the word interim, and actually sometimes sometimes forget to do it in actual stories too. And then I'm always like, there's like interim. Well, here's the problem with that. Would you like to know why? Everyone's interim. Interim city manager, interim chief. Now we have an interim assistant police chief. So we'll use their regular titles. It's okay.
Yeah. It's funny. You think like if you're at a press conference, like interim chief Thiechi, interim chief Thiechi, I have a question. I'm from the Cincinnati Inquirer. You say chief Thiechi.
Chief. Just chief.
All right. Just chief. But looking forward to having her here momentarily and honestly sticking with the theme of policing and, fighting crime. And yesterday, Sherry, you covered it. You were there for it. The city rolled out there.
The summer public safety plan. I called it the crime plan a few times yesterday, and I was quickly corrected. And to be fair, the crime plan doesn't sound great, but that is like short.
Well, that's what it is, because crime is really, really up and it's trending up again. Violent crime, that is.
It is, and I do have to say this is the earliest we've really heard. I think we're going to let the chief talk about this herself. I've known her for a long time. She's risen through the ranks. She's a planner, and I love a good plan. You've seen my to-do list, my handwritten, different colors. So I love a good plan, and I did go over to that. And, of course, everything remains to be seen, but there is a written plan. They didn't go into too many details yesterday, but I went ahead and pulled that plan and took a look at it like overnight to see. And, you know, it's a lot of things we've heard before. Extra money for overtime, looking at the data, concentrating on the hotspots. But, you know, every district chief, Cincinnati has five districts, was asked to write a plan. And, you know, what do you need? What are we looking at? And it's definitely subject to change because the hotspots change and everything. And so I looked at it and I thought pretty detailed. So it's only April. I wish it was summer. I wish the sun was out. doesn't seem like the weather's quite with us yet. But going into things, there it is at least some sort of plan.
Is, to put it in perspective, Sherry, we're trending toward another potentially, we're not in a good place right now in Cincinnati again, after back-to-back record years of, correct me if I'm wrong, homicides, correct?
Correct. And shootings and homicides. And I think, you know, we are seeing it over the river in northern Kentucky too. We had that, you know, awful shooting with children involved earlier this week. And so it's not a problem that's isolated to Cincinnati. But, you know, the urban core, keeping it safe and, you know, is something that we look at very closely.
So we're already – what was the – speaking of data, the statistic that we're already 30% higher year over year in shootings.
I looked at a
from
lot
last
of,
year. Is
I
that
looked
correct?
At a lot of data overnight. It's definitely up. I forget what the exact number is.
Yeah, I thought I heard something on the radio. I thought it was around that 30% mark. Folks, if you didn't listen to last week's episode with Joe Dieters, Hamilton County Prosecutor, I would encourage you to go do that. Because I think a lot of the things we're talking about here, he kind of addressed, and that's getting back to proactive policing, the need for that, as we're seeing these violent crimes go up, shootings go up, homicides going up. I think that you will get an interesting perspective there on what he says about this and the politics that are involved, and. Yeah, I would encourage you to go back and listen to that if you didn't. Sherry, is there anything else you want to add on this?
Well, I just think she's really the perfect guest for today to really talk about these things. But certainly, you know, they have not – something that came to light this week and some other policing stories and at this press conference, they have not put out the actual parameters for the police chief job, like nationally, because they're going to do a national search. And they still are saying, you know, we're going to have one in place by like July, August. I was a little bit like, what are you waiting for? Time to put that out, see what comes in. Of course, there's a lot of internal candidates too, including the chiefs on today. And so we will see what happens with that. But all of these things are very important when we're looking to attract the best talent in this country to come here and lead our police department, guided by the collaborative agreement. There's no way that somebody who is like, let me apply for this job, isn't going to be looking at the things that we're looking at, isn't going to be looking at the state of crime in general and, you know, what the coverage has been like, what's happening in politics in the city and everything. And so all of these things are definitely going to come into play when this very important decision, which a lot of us have put this on like, oh, the mayor, this, you know, no, interim city manager, John Kerr, you know, we had him on the podcast. This is his decision. I expect him to make this decision. Some of the things I've seen in, you know, the behind the scenes things this week that was happening with the appointment of the interim assistant police chief, John Kerr is going to make this decision. Like that's his job.
Well, he better make the right decision.
And I think that's what's going to happen here.
He better make the right decision, given where things are at right now with crime and, you know, not only in the immediacy, but looking long term. Certainly this is there should be a lot of scrutiny on this decision, and it needs to be the right decision. Let's jump over. Bring on. You know what? Chief Thiege. Special guest time here on the That's So Cincinnati podcast, and I think we've already given a really great introduction leading in. But Chief Thiege, thank you so much for joining us. You're here in person. It's great to see you, and welcome to the podcast. How are you?
Oh, I'm great. Thank you very much for having me. I appreciate it.
You know what? I really wanted to give people a chance to get to know you. I mean, Jason and I were just talking about the press conference yesterday about the summer public safety plan, and you're really in charge of things as we go into this big time and people are paying attention. And I wanted to give people a chance to get to know you because I feel we did that a long time ago, but that was a long time ago as you rose through the ranks. So this is a perfect setting to do something like that.
Thank you.
And you're named interim chief earlier this year. And we want to get into some of your background, your history with your family, a family of law enforcement officers, but just take us back to that moment when you were named as the interim chief. And I think from everything I hear, like you have a shot at being taking the interim tag off. What was that like for you, that moment?
Sure. So I think for quite a while now, everybody has known that Chief Isaac was reaching the end of his career with us and going to be retiring, moving on to different things. I've known for a while that, yeah, I wanted to be his replacement, even if it was in an interim capacity. I think this city is so very unique. The police department's relationship with the city is so very unique. And I think I have a grasp on that. And by being able to show that during an interim capacity, I would show that this is a very good situation for the department, for the city, to have me as interim.
Do you even feel like it's interim? I feel like there's problems that are just coming all the time and you're not like, well, I'm not in the job permanently. It's probably, I'm guessing, a lot of crises.
Yeah. So actually,
and you just deal with them as they come.
Yeah. Funny that you say that, because actually as soon as it was public knowledge that I was interim, two of my mentors that are now retired from the police department, both of them told me, take the interim off because you're the chief. You own it. You know, the buck stops with you.
That's what I said. So. I said I'd call her chief because that's what I'm seeing you as. And that's what I'm – when I'm interviewing you and talking with you, I was like, no, I don't use the word interim.
Yeah.
So it really kind of opened my eyes when they said that, though. Okay, go ahead and take the interim off of it. But that does mean – everything that comes with a permanent chief comes with my time in the interim capacity. So, yeah, I own it, and it stops with me.
And I was reading the piece that Sherry and Cam Knight did on you when you were named interim, and went talked about some of the history of your family. Your dad was a captain in the Cincinnati Police mm-hmm. Department. Your two uncles were law enforcement officers. Many other family members. You have four kids, and one of them also is in the department. Take us way back to you growing up on the West Side. You went to West High. Your dad's in the police department. Like you said, all the other family members. Was this just your dream from day? You know, from the far back as you remember to be in this seat?
Yeah. No, actually, so law enforcement, you know, I grew up around it. So it's not a strange concept to me for anybody, man or woman, to get into law enforcement. That's what we all knew. But it wasn't something that was really on my radar early on. And then I got married right out of high school, had four kids, didn't really think it was in my future until the day my brother forced me to go down and take the test. Originally, I just thought I wanted to see if I could pass all of the stages of the testing process, still not really knowing that I wanted the job. But then with each time, as time passed throughout my career, it was like I got bit by the bug again and again. So, okay, yeah, I passed the test. Now I want to be in the class. Okay, I graduated the class. Now I want to be an officer. Okay, I've been an officer. Now I want to be a sergeant. So it just, like I said, it's get bit by a bug over and over again to just keep pushing you and pushing you further in your career.
Where do you fall in the family line? Are you the baby?
No, I'm number three okay. out of eight.
Oh, my goodness. I don't remember. Cameron did that part of the story.
Yeah.
Three? Okay.
And four of your siblings? Went into law.
Mm-hmm.
So five of the eight.
Five of the eight went into law enforcement, correct.
All in Cincinnati Police?
One with Hamilton County Sheriff's Department. Okay. There's four of us with Cincinnati PD and one with the Sheriff's Department. But what's even more unique, above and beyond the fact that we all went into law enforcement, is that four of the five of us chose to continue to promote. So my brother with the Sheriff's Department retired at the rank of captain. My two brothers with Cincinnati both retired at the rank of captain. I have a sister who is in District 5, and she has always just preferred to remain a police officer. She didn't want to get into the supervisory role and responsibilities. And great, she's been on over 32 years now, and she's a police officer in District 5. So I'm actually the last of us to come on to the department.
You know what? Let's talk about District 5, because we've actually talked about it a lot on this podcast and at the budget hearing earlier. This is a very, like, the last council put a lot of, you know, what's happening with it. I took a tour of it. I don't often say my opinion on the podcast, but it's time to have a new District 5.
I think that's a fact, not an opinion.
I saw the conditions, and it was very, you know, disappointing to have the officers working in conditions like that when they have such a difficult job. Where do we stand with all of that?
So prior to the election, Betsy Sunderman, when she was on council, she kind of took this up as a cause. Obviously, Betsy did not get reelected. I don't know just yet if there's going to be anybody at council that is going to take this up as a cause for us. But I also recognize this. There's a bigger conversation that needs to be had. Our District 1, for example, is sitting right in front of the TQL Stadium. There will be a time that I anticipate somebody's going to come knocking at our door over there and say that they want development to go on there. So we have that to think of as well. So I think the bigger conversation needs to be, other than just do we need a new District 5, what we need to talk about is our facilities as a whole.
I agree, because there was at one point, like, very brief discussion. Could they be in the same place? And I will say, I did get a sneak peek yesterday. There was a lot of concern about what is the response time mm-hmm. over in District 5. And it turns out it's the same as it's always been, because I'm sure you actually know this, but I'm telling the story, so this is new to me, that the response time is the same because the officers are out in the district in their cars, and they're just as close as they always were. And I was like, intriguing.
Yeah, exactly. I looked at those numbers last week before we submitted them. And yeah, when we were on Ludlow and when we were on Hamilton Avenue, response time to a call for service in District 5 is pretty much the same as it was when we were on Ludlow Avenue.
Because there was a big fight, like, oh, what neighborhood's going to get it that it covers and everything? And people were like, they thought that you're safer and everything. And I think people have kind of come around to the idea of, like, it's not the building, but that building is very important for our officers and where they're working and their safety. So there's, it's an important conversation, but not necessarily maybe the one we thought that it was.
Right, right. Yeah, and you know, you look at District 3, which is our newest facility for the police department, and I often refer to it as the Taj Mahal of districts.
Oh, I call it the palace.
Yeah, I call it the Taj Mahal. It's awesome. It's awesome.
And they should all be like that. There's nothing wrong with it being like that.
Right, but there's only so many dollars to go around. I understand that. I think I recently saw a newscast about city facility buildings as a whole, not just police. So
if they start, I'm sorry, here we go. I'm going to give my opinion again. If they started saving money when they said we need a new District 5, then they'd have the money by now. I was like, this classic city where, yeah, you know, we've known about this need for a very long time. And now they're like, oh, do we need one? Yeah. Yes, we do. We've been talking about it for years.
Yeah. The one good thing about the current temporary District 5, when we were told we had to vacate Ludlow Avenue, one of my areas of responsibility was to find the new location for District 5 and renovate the building. And I went on a tour of the city with city real estate representatives, and we couldn't find anything to put in a police station in. Mm. And so we found out that Talbert House was moving out of that location on Hamilton Avenue. We went and took a look at it. And the one good thing about that location, it is triple the square footage that Ludlow was. Ludlow was so tiny, and to the point that they even had to have a miniature-sized desk for the sergeants.
Like, that's not good working conditions.
No, it's not.
And in the meantime, as everything has happened, I mean, we have just really seen College Hill, like, amazed, come along, and what they're doing out there. It's like a mini 3CDC with all of the redevelopment that's happening. And I feel like that plaza might be, you know, it's right in the middle of everything.
Correct. Correct. Lots of good stuff going on in College Hill.
So we are talking about, you know, we mentioned the police officers and, you know, their mental state and, like, treating them right, because they're just out there seeing so many things. And I think we're seeing this in every profession, like, talking about people's mental health. And, like, I, you know, I was listening with half an ear. I think you were in council, or somebody was talking mm-hmm. about a new program.
Correct. So we recently stood up, excuse me, we recently stood up an officer wellness unit. I say that like it's a lot of resources. To start us off, it is literally a unit of one individual. We have one person that's managing all of this for us. But officer wellness over the years past has had such a stigma attached to it. Officers didn't want to step forward and say, I need help, because they would think their career was in jeopardy, or, you know, their reputation as an officer was in jeopardy. And so what we're trying to do is change that thought, that it's okay to say, I'm not okay. It's absolutely yeah. fine. In fact, I encourage somebody who thinks that they need some help to step forward and say, I need some help, because we have an amazing, Ms. Tiffany Galvez right now is managing our wellness unit, and she has an amazing list of resources of all kinds. So, and any help an officer needs, we have a resource to fit their needs.
I really commend you for that. I think it's wonderful that you're doing this. And I, cause that's something I've wondered, as we were talking earlier off the recording, about my brother being a Columbus police officer, and he'll tell me things, and I'm like, you know, and he's been 6 years, you know, in as an officer. But what about, you know, folks who have been there 20 and, you know, plus years, and the things that you've seen, and like how that wears on, you know, you've seen everything and the worst of everything. And it's got to wear on you.
Yeah, I think some of the things that officers see just on a daily basis could wear on the average individual. And then if you take a deeper dive, think about like some of our assignments, some of the jobs that our officers do. One in particular, our personal crimes unit. I applaud those officers, those investigators there. I couldn't do what they do on a daily basis, but they're passionate about it. The lives that they help is amazing by the work that they do. But yeah, you got to think about, you know, how much is too much for one person to see. And so not only that, but one of the things that I really would like about the wellness unit is when we would have a critical incident of any kind, we have a police psychologist that's available for the officers, and we would send them to the police psychologist. They would, you know, report back that they're good to go, and we never circled back around with them. We should really be checking back around 6 months later, a year later. Sometimes that anniversary date of a critical incident could trigger something we weren't anticipating. And so I want to do more of follow-up with our officers after they've been involved in a critical incident.
And you throw on top of that morale and, you know, we know what's happened the last few years just in America with the defund the police. And unfortunately, here in Cincinnati, our council has not done that. But it also, you know, and so you throw that on top of a lot of these things that you see on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. And how is morale in the department? You know, I've heard, you know, that, hey, this has been a tough time for officers, as you know, and I'm just talking about police in general.
Sure. Yeah, I think it's absolutely been a tough time for the profession as a whole across the country and across the world. When the pandemic first hit, I went to a couple of roll calls and just thanked the officers for what they were doing, because I was now asking them to do something that nobody had ever asked me to do. Nobody as an officer, nobody ever asked me to go out and patrol during a pandemic. We didn't know what that was going to be like. We didn't know what the challenges they were going to face. So the fact that they, you know, put their boots on and went out every day and patrolled the streets of Cincinnati during a pandemic, I applaud them for that. Then you throw civil unrest on top of that. It's like a double whammy in an officer's career. And so, yeah, we lost a few officers after the 2020 settled down towards the end of the calendar year. But I understand why. I truly understand why. It was a tough year for officers.
And this all comes into play when it comes to recruiting officers too, right? Like, I've heard things about, you know, the classes are – the lists are getting smaller. Like, mm-hmm. it's not the kind of job, like, that people used to think that it was. They do understand that it's hard and it might not be something they want to do. Where do we stand, like – and council is like, we're prioritizing it. Where do we stand right now with what do we need?
Yeah. So let me just kind of preface that question by, in case any of your listeners here are thinking about a career in law enforcement. So you are not going to get rich as a police officer, but you will be able to have a very nice life for your family. I've raised four kids, put them through Catholic schools and college with my career as a police officer and my husband's career. But you're not going to get rich. However, it is probably one of the most fulfilling things you will ever do. The way you can go out and help people, help a child, help a homeless person, help whatever, it's extremely rewarding, extremely fulfilling. That being said, when I applied over 30 years ago, 4,500 people signed up to take the test, and there were 45 people in my class. So the selection process really had to dwindle those numbers down. We just gave a test the week of Thanksgiving this past November. We had 789 people sign up, and only 480 actually showed up the day of the class. So we've got to do a really better job of marketing the profession, and just, you know, reach out to get applicants and show them and explain to them what this job really could be to them. So we're working on that. We've got a committee together now to try to revamp some of our recruiting efforts and make sure we're doing cutting edge efforts there.
Let me ask you this. So what year was your recruit class?
I started in October of 90.
How many women were in it?
I think there was probably six or seven at the time.
How many were in the last one?
I don't know off the top of my head. I don't have those numbers with me. Yeah, yes, definitely more than that. Yeah, I think there was nine out of a class. We started with 46.
Okay, but you do have an initiative that
we do.
Before anything, before it's time to be, you know, chief or 30% by 2030, right?
Correct.
Tell me about that.
In September of last year, the Cincinnati Police Department signed the pledge. It's called the 30 by 30 Initiative. And what that is we pledge as an organization to take all the necessary steps to try to attain 30% women in our sworn ranks by the year 2030. Now, we are off to a pretty good start because we're at about 22.5% now. The national average is 15%. So we're already above the national average because we do a lot of recruiting for women already. But what this initiative does, it lets us work with other agencies across the country and share ideas, steal ideas on what works and what doesn't work for this.
Do you think that more women are attracted to the job and they're starting to understand how rewarding it can be?
I do think more women are attracted to the job. I think when they see other women doing it, then they say, oh, if she can do it, I can do it. We do still have some challenges, especially when we hire women. Obviously, they are in the age range where they may be starting a family and some other things. And so we have challenges there that we have to work through just to make sure that the working environment is conducive to women with young families.
Let me ask you this.
Yeah, yeah.
What would it mean that we would have a female chief?
Yeah.
First good, one,
great
right?
Great question.
Yeah, yeah. So I guess because I came from a family of law enforcement, the idea of being a police chief who happens to be female is not as doesn't rock my world like I think maybe it would for some other people. I would truly be honored to have that role. But I will tell you, when they were having my promotional ceremony for executive assistant chief at City Hall, and I was talking to some female officers who came to the ceremony, and a few of them brought their young daughters, and they came up to me with their young daughters and said, I brought her here because I wanted her to see what you have done. And so when I started talking to other women on the department, it made me realize, while it may not rock my world, it is significant to suit through other people's eyes. So I have to remember that. I have to remember what this means to other people, not just to me.
And we've had Hamilton County Sheriff Charmaine McGuffey on the podcast mm-hmm. before. And have you known her a long time?
I've known her for a while. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Have you guys worked together yet since you?
We've worked on some things like the target range, you know, if we could rebuild a
target range that we could share. Look at this. They're so newsy today.
We've had some meetings on that.
Mm-hmm. That's in Lincoln Heights. You want to say anything about what's going on with that? Because we've written a lot about that.
Yeah, just that we've been where we are since I think it's the 1950s. The current target range fits our needs. However, I recognize the community concerns about having a Cincinnati Police Department target range in their neighborhood. And so we are open to discussions about relocating, maybe sharing some land or some space with the Hamilton County Sheriff's Office. But just like the District 5 issue, it all takes money. It all takes money.
We had Joe Dieters on last week, and he talked about proactive policing. And I don't think he was necessarily talking about the Cincinnati police. He did talk a little bit about Cincinnati, but just kind of, I think overall the proactive policing and how do you view that? Is it, I know it's a tough balancing act, and especially given the times we're in and the political climate and
what's
your viewpoint on that? Yeah.
Yeah. So, I've had an opportunity recently to address a few of our classes at the recruit or at the academy. It's our continuous training every year that the officers have to go through. And this has come up a few times. And what I've told the officers is, first of all, most of them came on the job to do police work, proactive included. Mm-hmm. And so I have told them, as long as they are out doing the right thing for the right reasons, relying on their training, if something happens, I will support them. I will support them. And I think the key part of that is our training. I have no doubt in my mind we are the best police department in the country, and a lot of that is because we have the best training in the country. And so if they just rely on their training and some of their moral compass when they're making decisions, they'll make the right choices, and I'll support them.
Is there any, through your time in the department, was there one instance or call that you took or response that you had that just you think about it a lot through your career? Is there something that just has stuck with you and is, I don't know if motivates the right word, but has kind of helped give you perspective on the work that
sure.
you do?
I think one of them is, keep in mind, I grew up in a middle-class suburban white neighborhood. Mm-hmm. That's how I was raised. And then I graduated the academy, and the first neighborhood that I was assigned to was Over the Rhine, second shift, 3 in the afternoon to 11 at night in Over the Rhine. And I remember just being on routine patrol, driving around, and I saw this very young African-American boy riding a bike. He looked like maybe about 3 years old or so. And I waved to him, said hi, and he said hi to me. And then his mom snatched him up and said, don't talk to the police. Don't talk to the police. And that was over 30 years ago. And I still think about that sometimes because it's like, okay, I didn't know, again, my upbringing, I would not have experienced that. And so I saw a divide there that needed mending. It needed mending. And so I think that's now why doing things with the community and really pushing the community to get involved and get engaged with what we're doing and us getting engaged in what they're doing is important to me.
Yeah. It's interesting you bring that up. I remember a conversation with Eddie Hawkins a few years ago where he said it was, you know, I think it was in the fall of when all the protests had happened earlier, what, that year. And he said one of his big concerns was that so much effort had been put in to really help young folks not see the police in a negative way. And he felt – he was very concerned that what had happened with the nationwide protests, that this could set that back. Have you noticed any setbacks in that way, or, you know, has there been a disconnect?
Actually, I've not seen a setback. Actually, I've seen the exact opposite.
Oh, great.
In talking with people in the communities and some others who get involved with our police department, it's the exact opposite. They are pledging that we are not the city that represents what's going on across the country. And the reason we fared so well during the unrest in 2020 is because of the hard work that both the community and the police and the city has put in for the last 20 years. And, you know, we're coming up on our 20-year anniversary of the collaborative. So that collaborative, it's not just a document. It's not just a piece of paper. It's you know, what has helped us bridge the gap for the last 20 years.
Yeah.
I feel like I just got assigned an anniversary story. I'm just saying.
Thinking back and bring it back to your family, and your dad was a captain, and what was the best advice he gave you when you decided to do this?
Believe it or not, my brothers and I, we get asked this question quite often, and we all remember the same piece. Don't forget where you came from. You know, when you're trying to decide, what did that officer do? Why did he do it? Don't forget where you came from. You know, I walked in those officer's shoes. It might have been 30 years ago, but I've done what they've done.
Yeah. So. Now, is anyone else in your family besides your son or daughter?
My son. Okay. My youngest is a sergeant with the Boone County Sheriff's Department over in Northern Kentucky. Okay. And I actually have a nephew that is a sergeant with the Cincinnati Police Department now.
That's what I was going to ask you. Are there any other family members in
it? It goes on even a little further. Those are the ones that normally my immediate family that people hear me talk about. But my daughter-in-law is a Hamilton County probation officer full-time. She's a sheriff's deputy part-time. Mm-hmm. And then I have a brother-in-law who is a detective with Green Township PD. So it continues. It's like a spider web. It just continues to go out.
What's Christmas like? Do you talk about work?
Actually, we don't really talk about work much. People think that we do. Typically, we don't unless there's some big incident that has occurred. We might kind of discuss that. But holidays are interesting around our house because, as I said, there were 8 kids in my family. We all still live on the west side of Cincinnati. We all have children and grandchildren now. So a family gathering is roughly 64, 65 people. And so for the holidays and
now quintessential west side.
I do have a tough question. So you have 8 grandchildren.
I do.
This is not tough. I'm just joking.
Don't ask me which one's my favorite, Jason.
We could tell before we started recording, when you were talking about your 8 grandchildren, you were beaming. Do you think are any of them dreaming of, I don't know what their ages are, but are any of them dreaming of being a police? Are any of them actually in law enforcement?
No, none of them are in law enforcement. So their ages range. My oldest granddaughter is 16 and my youngest grandson is 6 months.
Okay.
So it's a wide range. But to answer your question, I have a 10-year-old grandson, Cooper, who is just, one of the 8 that's an apple of my eye. But Cooper will tell us if he doesn't become a Major League Baseball player, he wants to be a policeman. So,
all right. He is Tim Luck in the first.
Yes, me too. Yeah,
Sounds like the family business could be good too.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's fantastic. This has been great. Sherry, do you have any tough questions in the end here?
No.
Come on, Sherry. You always have a tough question.
We did that earlier this week. We're good.
No questions about Cooper's baseball career or anything like that?
No.
Yeah. He's going to get to go to his first opening day next week.
So I'm so excited opening day. That.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah.
Well, Wait, Chief, are you taking him?
I'm taking him opening day.
Chief, thanks so much for coming in. Just congratulations again on this appointment and the work that you're doing, and appreciate what you and the Cincinnati Police do.
Thank you very much, Jason. You're very, very welcome.
Thanks again to Chief Thiege and Sherry. That brings us to our That's So Cincinnati moment of the week. And I think we realize, like, Chief Thiege is like the perfect guest for this podcast. That's So Cincinnati, Chief Thiege from the West Side, a big family. So many of her family members, Cincinnati police officers, and certainly appreciate their family service to the city of Cincinnati. But what's you got some up your sleeve for a moment? Just a moment.
I mostly am just like everything is really about Tuesday. It's the opening day parade.
It's back. First time since 2019.
Yes, it's so crazy to think about. And you know, remember when we had Phil Castellini on the podcast? And
I do.
He said, because we were talking about whether it was going to happen in 2021 or not, and he said, you know, he was really an all or nothing kind of guy about it. Like, what are you going to do? Social distance on the parade route and everything. Yeah. And, you know, everything we've heard about the parade so far is, you know, it's all. Like, and I think – I honestly feel like as much as we've heard about the political candidates, expect them all to be in the opening day parade, expect it to be – just like it always is. And, of course, what do we hear? Who's throwing out the first pitch?
Joe Burrow.
You know, I had a lot of people say to me, do you think Joe Burrow will be the Grand Marshal of the opening day parade? And I was like, no, it's the Reds.
It's Barry Larkin, right?
I think. Yes. Yeah. I was like, no, when everyone was kind of guessing who it might be. And I was like, no, I was like, it's, you know, it's the Reds, and I think they're going to want to kind of capture the excitement and the enthusiasm of their own, you know, franchise and remind everyone that Cincinnati is a baseball town.
It would have been perfect to have Joe, though, this year, especially after.
But he's going to throw out the first pitch, and I think that's really exciting. Some of his teammates are going to be in the stands to watch the opening game. It's not really the opening game, right? It's like the game.
Fifth game of the season, Home opener.
So anyway, I think it's going to just be a really fun day. And if I'm tired when we record next Wednesday, you'll know it's because I went to opening day.
You know, one thing we'll miss in the parade this year, Sherry?
Tell me.
The seal float.
We talked about that with Chris Seelbach.
I love that float. It's a cool float.
It was a good float. And it is, you know, it has RIP. Sign of the cross.
It's still in existence. Didn't he say it was in a barn somewhere?
He did, but it's not really salvageable.
It's probably not coming back anywhere.
So.
Well, it has retired. The seal has retired from the parade circuit. RIP Chris Seelbach seal float, but it was a good one. There will be plenty of great floats in the opening day parade. Go out and enjoy it, folks. Enjoy opening day. Thank you for support of this podcast, and we'll catch you next week.